Accession number 10419, rule 3.
Brigadier May, reel 3. You were talking about the Indian division rations, Brigadier.
Well, the reason for the fish was it wouldn't affect any religious susceptibilities of any of the troops. And so the compo ration included fish. And our soldiers, the Geordies particularly, didn't like the fish, which was tinned anyhow.
How did they, what was the relationship like between your battalion and the Indian troops around you?
We got on very well with all the troops, particularly the Gurkha battalions. And later, the proudest moment I had was when I heard a subedar major arguing whether the DLI were the best or the 2nd, 3rd Gurkhas. And I'd like to go back to May 1942 when I joined Tactical 8th Army. It was shortly before Montgomery arrived, and General Stauffenberg, on his way back to Cairo to take over command, came in to see us in the Ops CV at then he, of course, was shot down on the way back to Cairo, and General Montgomery, as he then was, came out to take over. And I will remember, because I was sent over to fetch him over to his first conference, and he said they don't allow beards in the 8th Army, do they? And I said, that, sir, is your senior naval liaison officer, Captain Bratt, sir. And he was then surprised. And
what was your first impressions of General Montgomery, Brigadier?
Well, he then wore an Australian hat with two badges, and he turned around and said, my ADC is fresh out from England. And I said, well, he'll get lost anyhow. And he said, who are the best? And I said, if you mean the best to find your way around, the 11th Hussars. And that's how he was later killed in Normandy. Johnny Poston came to take him around. And
did you meet Orking Leck at any time?
Yes, I did. I met them all.
Because there's always this play between the two personalities, and there's one or two rather unfortunate remarks that one was about said to the other. Just what was your estimation of Orking Leck?
Well, I thought he was a splendid chap, but he was very fond of the Indian Army, which was not surprising because he was an ex-Indian Army. And When Montgomery first moved out, we were at Borgel Arab, and then we moved forward to Alamein, which is where he fought that famous battle. And the night before the attack, he said, I want to sleep. I want to really sleep. You won't have any reports before 9 o'clock. And then he went to bed in his caravan, and
what were your duties and responsibilities at tactical headquarters, Brigadier?
Well, I was G2 ops, and as such used to get all the frequencies of the forward troops on the lines of phantoms. And I also used to get the Air Force frequencies as well. And so I could listen in to sorties being briefed, and then I could often get the message back to the he was later called ground liaison officer, air liaison officer, at and on where the bombs fell. I used to use Rhodesian post office operators, ex-Rhodesian post office operators, who sent the information back on key, because it was so red hot that the enemy hadn't got any time to take action on it. And I used to stand on top of the ops CV so that I could see what was happening. And we often were miles from Army headquarters, and
you'd be close to the action then, were you? Close to the fighting?
We were fairly close. On one occasion we got too close, and they shelled us. And as we weren't armoured in any respect, it was a very unpleasant experience.
Were you there when Alamein took place?
I was there over the Battle of Alamein, and I can tell you about the action when Colonel Vic Turner got his Victoria Cross. And because his battalion moved into a depression, and they thought it was a conspicuous thing and position. As the German tanks came into the position, they presented their bellies, and the six-pounders which the battalion had knocked them out. And I was asked for an estimate, and I said I think there are more than 50 and have been knocked out. And this was queried several times, because it was many more than had been done before. And it proved to be fairly accurate. In fact, I think 52 were knocked out. I'd like to go on to the Battle of Alanhafa, which was a very important turning point of the Battle of Alamein. This was interesting because our tanks were dug in and the German tanks were attacking them. And up the slope towards our tanks were a succession of telegraph poles which gave the exact distance away, and our guns, our tanks were able to knock all the German tanks out. And this was probably the turning point of the Battle of Alamein.
When you were in this battle situation, the whole picture was unfolding to you as the information came through to you.
Yes.
So you were getting a very broad picture of what was going on.
Yes.
And what did you do with that information that was coming to you?
I sent it back by key.
What happened next, Brigadier?
Well, Field Marshal Alexander used to come up frequently and see the less glamorous units like the workshops, and when Monty was allowed to go around the combat units, I saw him for a lot of my service, and General Alexander, as he then was, in Italy, when stopped at a roadblock by a military policeman for shelling, said, "What's the pattern?" And the military policeman told him what the pattern was, and he then said, "Well, that's it, and I'm off." And went on his way and crossed. I thought he was a splendid chap. He was a soldier's man.
He'd be well liked, was he, by the rest of the troops?
Yes, he was very well liked by everybody. He was a splendid chap.
In what ways was the artillery of help to you in Italy, Brigadier?
Well, the artillery support was absolutely magnificent. My artillery officer was Arthur Hazelrigg, who I said shot guns better than he played cricket, and he said that was the most flattering remark ever made about him, having captained Leicestershire, the gentleman, and Cambridge University.
What artillery weapon was the backbone of the artillery support?
The 25-pounder. But on one occasion, he asked whether I was prepared to have the Polish Corps firing on my front with medium guns, and I said I was prepared to have anything. And he said, "Right, we'll have the Poles." And they were absolutely bang on, and they saved us when the Boche was putting up a considerable attack. And I would also like to mention my padre, George Parr, who was a particularly good member. And on one occasion, when I thought he was going to get a decoration. He went down with a Red Cross flag in front of the, in full view, in front of the Germans, with mules on panniers, after a patrol had been caught in the open below us in the mountains. And because it was a howling failure, he didn't get anything at all. And he came back, and I had every gun that I could get to bear on strategic targets, and no one fired a shot. I remember having a chap out from the War Office who asked me what battle school I'd ever been to, and I said no battle school at all, because I learned my trade in the hardest school of all, in the Western Desert and in Italy. And he said, well, that's very odd. And I said, well, that's how it was. And he went back to London and reported adversely on me, apparently, because I hadn't been to a battle school, which I thought was ridiculous.
Was there any follow-up to that at all?
No, no follow-up at all.
Have you any other memories of officers within your own unit at this time?
One recollection of Russell Evans, who was a company commander. He went off the air in one of the last attacks near the Po, and he came in and said, I knew you wouldn't believe it, and so I brought my operator in, and his wireless arrow was shot off. It must have been an inch above his head, and that was why, because he'd gone off there.
Were they good officers?
They were frightfully good officers. They were the best officers that anybody ever had. I think the wartime officer was frightfully good. I believe that you can find no better officers than a British officer. And I have the greatest regard for them.
Have you any recollections of other ranks, sergeants, NCOs, who stand out in your memory?
Yes. When I came, when I became AQ of the division, I noticed that several of my sergeants had been upgraded, and I asked why this was, and I was told that the citations were so outstanding that they reckoned they needed more than a military medal. And there was no doubt about it that many of them were frightfully good. And there was a Sergeant Major McCourt who was particularly good.
was the quality of the German troops, Brigadier, that you were facing in Italy?
Well, it was interesting. On one occasion, we caught a patrol, and from the parachute corps, and it was composed of an officer, a warrant officer, and an NCO. And we brought this fellow in, and he we brought the sergeant in, who was the only one who was left alive, and I questioned him, and he gave some very interesting answers. And then I pulled my arm down and showed my parachute wings on my arm. And he said, "Have they got parachute officers, parachute corps officers, commanding battalions in the British Army?" And I said, "No, we just happen to be parachutists." And he was most surprised. And but I never thought that they were really exceptional. Provided you dominated your front line with patrols, you were absolutely as safe as houses.
What happened next, Brigadier?
Well, the ANQMG of the division was one of the few chaps who understood elephants, and was a box waller from Calcutta, and so they sent him back to India, and so I took over from him in June 65, and remained as AA in QMG until August, when the division went back to India. As such, I did the administrative job, and Field Marshal John Harding, who was then my corps commander, said, "Has anybody starved?" And I said, "No, sir." So he said, "Well, you can't be doing too bad a job."
And what kind of duties were these?
Well, they were administrative duties. And I'd done the only staff course at the Middle East Staff College, which had concentrated on G or AQ. And I had done a G course, and so I was operations side.
So we've been there just over 2 months.
And then I went back to the battalion to take up command, and whilst there, Field Marshal, as he later became, Alexander, arrived to see what went on. And I decided that I would have a sports meeting, because the war was over and it was pointless to do any training. And he arrived, and as pre-war mile champion of Ireland, he was naturally entirely in favour, and he said to me, "By the way, is it true that you've got a bottle of Angostura bitters?" And I said, yes, it is true. And he said, well, I heard you're the only Mason, 8th Army, who got a bottle of Angostura bitters. And I said, well, it was sent over with a kit from that was stored during the war. And he said, well, you know what I'll have when I come in to lunch. He said, I'll have a pink gin. And so I said, yes, well, when he inspected the guard, the quarter guard, it was found entirely by one company, but I had taken the trouble to make sure that the guard commander had a DCM, and the rest were as many as possible decorated, and I reported the fact to him, and he said, haven't you had a special guard on? You're the only battalion I know that wouldn't have a special guard on. And I said, well, I did say that people who were decorated might figure. And he smiled and said, well, you're the only battalion that so far has had one company on. And then he came over to the mess and had his pink gin.
Where were you exactly, Brigadier, when the war actually ended?
We were on the Po, on the line of the River Po, and the Indian regiments decided that they would come and worship with us when we had a church service for it, for the end of the war at our regimental headquarters, and they said they would take part but not worship, and all the Indian regiments were there, and their British officers naturally came along with us, and we held the service.
What happened after General Alexander's visit to you, Brigadier?
Well, after the war ended and the division went home, back to India, we moved on to Salsa Maggiore, which was where Kesselring had his headquarters. And the Japanese embassy was interned there, and others as well.